All right. Welcome, everyone, to another Sunday afternoon here. I guess I got to turn something down or something has to be turned down. A little bit of an echo there on the studio Skype. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio and PSN Radio. It seems my guest today is a little MIA. So I would like to put out there if anybody would like to come on and say anything about anything that they would like, more than welcome to. I think the Studio A Skype is still 347-688-2902, unless it's something different. I'm either going to have to have a call in or have somebody from the host room if they wanted to come on. I think there is a maybe a nibble out there. Not sure what's going to go on. But I was supposed to have had Keith Roberts on today. And I thought he knew. Well, I told him from 3 to 5, but I sure hope he doesn't think that that was 3 to 5 his time, which is over there in Arizona. That would be 6 o'clock. But I talked to him yesterday. We had a good little chat. We were going to talk about some things. He did say that he does a lot of yard work out there, so I don't know if he's caught out there in the middle of a sunny day out there in Arizona, wherever he's at. I think he's in Arizona. But I guess we'll just see what happens to go on. I can waffle on for a little bit, but I don't believe I can waffle on for a whole hour. So, unless that Studio A Skype has been changed or anything, 347-688-2902. I did want to say that, as the one promo there says a lot of the times, we are listener supported, so if you like what we're doing here. I heard Tom mention that, Mad Painter mention that at the end there. And I want to mention it right at the beginning also. Go hit that donate button if you like what we're doing here. I do have a little bit of a few things, interestingly enough, I can try to talk about it before someone wants to come on. I went to church this morning. I don't go every single week, every single weekend, every single Sunday or whatever, but I don't really believe in the church as an institution. But I do believe in God. That was interestingly enough. Oh, okay. Hang on a second here. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. I guess I wasn't sure it was going to be that quick. I thought you said you had a few things to do.
Yeah, I did. I decided I was going to just take it hold for a little bit. It's all my stuff's already written. I'm just transcribing it.
Oh, well, everyone, this is Gavin McCall. I don't know if you have some other name that you go by or what.
Well, I do go by Gavin D. McCall. Sometimes when I write books or I'm authoring something, I'll put Gavin D. McCall, but I decided I would represent all Gavin McCalls everywhere.
Well, you know, I don't know if you happen to be listening there for a minute or so, but I had a good talk yesterday with Keith, and he was going to do an hour with me at least.
But, yeah, you know, I try to help out when I can. If Keith calls me or if Jerry calls me or anybody from the station needs some help, I definitely will lend a hand because I love this I love doing this stuff, man.
Yeah, I do too. I happen to mention there that I don't have a refined enough type of show or material to waffle on myself for a whole hour. Or 54 minutes, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just not able to do that. I would rather talk to somebody, throw back some ideas to someone else. I told Keith yesterday I was actually looking for a co-host, you know, because I just get tired of a lot of the people out there that do a lot of the internet radio. They do a lot of shows and stuff like that, but they don't really know what they're talking about, and they don't really have the right clue. They claim to be informed and aware and awake, but you know, they just propagate the left-right paradigm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's very interesting to me because I don't consider myself like a perfect being, or I don't consider myself like done with anything. Like, you know, I'm 34 years old. I may have stopped growing in height, but I'm still growing in mind and all these other things. And there's lots of talk out there, topics on stuff that I refrain from commenting on because I really don't know. I really don't know a lot of what's talked about, you know. And I don't consider myself closed-minded, but I do feel like a lot of what I do involves listening to other people. So, you know, if someone wants to talk over me or wants to take this time, I will let them, because if they have something that's important to say, by golly, I want to hear it.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way there too. Up until a little over 3 years ago, if somebody would have told me 3.5 years ago that I was going to be doing this, I would have laughed at them. Because I've always been an introvert, and I've always been a listener myself too. I've always observed, and I learn from observing how people can be. I learned what they say and what they do are two different things, you know, and a lot of times I'll keep my thoughts to myself because, you know, I don't really want to go around calling everybody that I meet a hypocrite, but a lot of them are, you know?
Yeah, it is true. And I'm not dreadfully self-observant. I'm going to make mistakes. So I do appreciate when people give me feedback and tell me I'm wrong or whatever, you know, because I'm not trying to convince anybody that I'm right or that I should get anything, any kind of special treatment for anything that I think or believe or say. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But I do enjoy people listening and interacting with me and exploring wherever topic that we can.
I see from your Skype avatar there, you have some sort of a transhumanist type of avatar there.
Well, you know, I'm a graphic artist, and I get challenged every now and then. I have clients that ask me for stuff like, "Hey, can you do me a tattoo?" So I do tattoos, and I was going through this. Basically, I have a particular type of artistic style that I started going through a few years back, and I had a friend. She was like a model, okay, but she was not a real model, but her pictures were just so good, like she could be a model. And she had a pet skunk, and she told me, she said, "Hey, could you draw me a picture of me as a skunk?" And so I did this art piece where I took a piece of paper and some markers, and I drew her as a skunk, and I sent it to her, and that kind of started this whole scenario where she's like, "Hey, could you make me a hammerhead shark?" And so I took pictures of her and I made some composite images, and I made it look like she was a hammerhead shark, but then I made it look like she was in deep space with wires and stuff coming out of her. And so that picture you see is me attempting to make myself look like a cyborg. And I think I did pretty good on it.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that. That's why I mentioned that. Excuse me. Trying not to cough on air there, but what do you get into, Gavin, as far as this internet thing, other than the graphic arts?
Well, I've been around since the web was new. I mean, I remember I used to be like when I was like 5 or 6 years old, believe it or not, my mom would be on her computer and I'd be trying to kick her off her computer so I can get in there and get into DOS, play some 8-bit games and whatever. And I'd be sitting there messing around, and then all of a sudden there would be these words on the screen. And you know what it was? It was like my mom's boss or somebody she worked with, she would call our phone and it would instantly take over whatever I was doing. And that was really strange to me.
Uh-huh.
But because then here's these words on the screen. I'm thinking we're being hacked or something, you know?
You broke it.
And my mom's like, no, that's my boss. Let me talk to him. I mean, that was back before Windows.
Yeah, that was back in the, back when people had to actually know what Linux and DOS was, isn't it?
Yeah, we've watched as I consider myself a power user. I consider my mom and other people power users because when we get a machine, we figure out how to use the machine to its max ability, and we're known to break stuff if it can be broken. So I consider myself a power user. And so the World Wide Web was being developed and becoming more accessible, we just knew that eventually people that really, because it's kind of a turnoff to people, if they can't easily access it or do anything with it, they don't get involved. But now that you can be involved with your cell phone from anywhere pretty much in the world, it's basically you have a high proportion of users that are non-technical on the internet. And so all the stuff they're discussing, whatever, it really doesn't pertain to most of us power users who are just, you know, we have technical jobs, whatever. We just try to stay low, like stay out of the public eye. Like I, you know, like my own father, if you tried to go search for him on the internet, you would maybe get lucky and find a picture.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's it. He's basically a hacker who's worked for the government for so long, and he's now retired. But yeah, he was able to maintain almost no presence on the internet the whole time, and I appreciate that. But being that I'm kind of in the public eye, I'm a musician. I've already been there. You know, I can't really escape it. I've got to be out there on the internet. So
yeah. You don't do a lot of corruption exposing or anything like that, do you?
Well, that's the thing is I'm outspoken. I as far as an information security person, I take my responsibility very seriously. I have people that trust me, and if I were to do anything to compromise that trust, it would ruin me as a professional, as an information tech. And so I've been trusted with passwords, with very secure databases, and, you know, emails, all that kind of stuff. I've never leaked anything. I've never looked at anything I wasn't supposed to look at. And if I ever did, there would definitely be forensic evidence somewhere. So
certainly, yeah.
Yeah, so I pride myself in being a trusted person, because when people say I have a problem with my computer, sometimes I can fix it in seconds, sometimes a couple minutes. But I let them know that I take this very seriously, and I don't ever want to be thought of someone that compromised security ever, because that's not what I'm about.
Right.
And I have to say, you know, like for the Snowdens out there, you know, what they are doing in one way is helpful, but in another way, it creates an antitrust issue with our government and our own people. If you have... if you have people you trust,
yeah,
you gotta kind of like, if you're gonna whistleblow, it's very curious to me these days how people are able to be protected as whistleblowers.
Yeah, you know that's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Whistleblowing or being trusted with these secrets, as you're talking about Snowden with the NSA and some of the other people that have come out over the years or whatever. You know, it's really amazing the simple and childish, immaturish manipulations that a lot of people will be able to swallow. Well, let's just take Snowden for example, Gavin. He works for the NSA. He uncovers or comes across a lot of information. I don't know how many terabytes or how many gigabytes it happens to be, you know. But I think it's well over like 100,000 documents or something like that he released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Emails from Hillary Clinton, emails from a lot of supposedly people that are in control, a lot of authorities. And the system attacks him. What does the system expect people to do with this information? Are they just supposed to put it in a file and not let it bother them? These people that are in control are doing bad things. They know that human beings are going to do two things with this kind of information. They're either going to profit from it and work along with the system, or they're going to try to expose the system.
Yeah, yeah.
And the system itself attacks these people for exposing it. You know, like I said, it's really a double-edged sword. Why would they entrust Snowden? They obviously had to have profiled him, and they obviously had to have known what he was going to do with this information.
Yeah, that's true. That's very suspicious to me, because I've recently had to go through background checks because I was going to do some work at the Naval Air Station here in Pensacola, Florida. And, you know, of course, I'm sitting there thinking, I've done nothing wrong. I know I'm going to pass. And so when it passed, I don't know exactly how deep they go. But when I'm vetted to go into a military base, you know, I kind of think of it like, you know, this is really awesome. I don't want to ruin this.
Right.
You know, I got to watch the Blue Angels practice over me as I'm knocking down walls. You know, I was doing demolition and construction over there. And I really enjoyed it. But it's like I wouldn't just, you know, these are people that are going to risk our lives or their lives for us. And anything can happen to them. Like we had an accident here, I think, a year ago, where we had a bunch of Marines pass away in a helicopter crash right over, right here in the bay. I think it was over by, it was by Navarre or Fort Walton Beach or something like that. Well, about a month ago, several Marines, young Marines, got together and did I can't recall how many miles walk, but they went walking for a long way up the East Coast to, in memorial for these people that died in the helicopter crash. And so you never know what's going to happen, but when you make a decision to go leak information, you really, I mean, I would never do it. I mean, I can't think, there might be a scenario where I have to ask myself, honestly, would I do this or do that? And to be perfectly honest, I have other things to think about. I'm not in that deep of a security realm. I deal with like end users, like people that really aren't that technical. And sometimes I deal with professors at colleges, which have no computer experience, which in of itself is kind of funny. But, you know, that I take that very seriously. And I wouldn't ruin that. I wouldn't ruin that. And,
well, you see, that's the problem, though, Gavin. That's the conundrum that these people face. They come across information that pertains to life itself. You know, pertains to arms trades, maybe going to war, or maybe hiding a false flag, or maybe the proof of a false flag. And that's what these people come across. And that's, you know, that's why they whistleblow. So
how do you know, like, what you're revealing is true? Like, you know, like, for example, if you came across some communique from between military installations that said, hey, we have a UFO here and we have we have a guest from another planet. You know, how do you know that that's really true information? Maybe that's just being put there for you to see if who would leak it.
Yeah. I mean, to catch the suckers? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's like a cat and mouse game. This whole propaganda in...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the chance that people have to take.
Yeah.
That's the that's the chance that the system actually has to take. I have this conspiracy I've been mulling over for quite a few years now, ever since I've been doing this, a little over 7 years now. I actually think that the internet was made available to the public in order to awaken the masses, in order to have these whistleblowers come out.
That's very interesting, because if you notice in other countries where they limit the type of encryption you can have and stuff like that, they've actually kind of made contingencies in case people do come out or try to, you know, release information. But over here, we're just basically, I think it seems like we're in the game of, well, if someone releases some information, well, we have a whole way we can attack their character and everything about them to try to devalue their contribution.
Logical fallacies, yes.
Yeah. And all I can really tell people is just stand up for yourself. Stand your ground. Stand your ground, because...
You know what I kind of feel like, Gavin? I don't know if you've seen movies or old television shows or anything like that where they will portray somebody as kind of like a evangelist or maybe a whistleblower. You know, you'll see some man or a woman on a street corner standing on a soapbox, and they're... telling people that go by, they're coming after us, you better get ready, the apocalypse is coming. And they always portray this man or woman as someone who's crazy. And that's kind of the way I feel sometimes. I'm kind of like the crazy man standing on a corner shouting at people.
Well, how do you, I mean, some great people have gotten started that way. Like, for instance, you know, Abraham Lincoln. I mean, he was one of those crazy guys that was standing on a soapbox and people were coming up to listen to him. And what was he talking about? Politics.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a good way to start. I mean, that's a traditional way to start. If you want to be heard, go get a soapbox.
Right. And a lot of people are going to ask the question, what's a soapbox anyways? These are just some of the things that run through my head. I actually think that, you know, if one subscribes to the conspiracy that they are after us and they're trying to depopulate the planet from the 7.5 billion down to a minimum of 2 billion, I think, is what the conspiracy says, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to create strife, I think. I think they're going to have to, well, I believe they want us to strike against them. They want us to create a revolution. And I think the internet was the perfect way to do it. Because, you know, up until, I don't know when the first iPhones and Androids started coming out, but, you know, you had to have either a computer, a laptop, or a desktop to access the internet. And now you don't anymore. You can do it with virtually a $40 flip phone. You can access the internet and you can look stuff up with some very, very inexpensive phones. You can get an application and get a live stream account or a Ustream account. And you can go live on 4G or LTE signals. You can create a video on your phone and put it out on the internet within no time.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to do that. I would encourage people to do it. Absolutely. I mean, you see around America, they're starting to put more and more cameras on police officers, and we've seen how this improves the departments. It makes them be actually like what they're supposed to be. You know, I mean, it keeps them in check, but it also, the cell phones keep society in check, you know, and this is relevant every single day. You know, I have to say, like, I live in a really nice neighborhood. I'm very grateful and blessed to be where I am. And so I guess it was yesterday or the day before, I'm driving home from Walmart. I had my neighbor needed to go to Walmart, pick up some boxes. So I graciously gave him a ride there, and I'm coming back. And before I can get to my house, the street's blocked off. Okay. There was this red car parked in the middle of the street, and you have sheriffs parked around it. And I'm like, okay, it's a blockade. I can't get to my house. So I drive around the corner, park at my neighbor's, and then I walk over, look. And then, you know, I get a wild hair. My roommate and I, we decide we're going to go talk to this one of the cops that's sitting there behind this red car, because we want to be informed. We want to know what's going on our street and our neighborhood. So we walk up, we talk to the officer. He told us it was a stolen vehicle. Okay, someone had driven a stolen vehicle over to our neighborhood, parked it illegally in the middle of the street. Well, I didn't know what had transpired. But a little bit later, I went and I talked to a neighbor of mine. He had seen the whole thing. He had seen everything. And he told me he just got off work, parked in his driveway. He was sitting there. He looked over and he sees two red cars pull up into the middle of our street. One parks next to the other in the middle of the street. A man gets out of the one vehicle, jumps up and down on the trunk, and attempts to bust.
Hello, everyone. Hope I'm still on air. Hang on a second. Oh boy, I had something happen there. Can somebody tell me?
That was weird.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was just commenting on that because my neighbor had a phone, okay? And as soon as he saw somebody attempting to damage property in the middle of the street, he took pictures.
Yeah.
And he called the police. And if it wasn't for that technology, you know, he may not have been able to react as quickly.
Uh-huh.
And so I definitely encourage people out there, if you see something that doesn't look right, take pictures, do so. You might save somebody's life. You might actually help close a case, you know. But we really don't know who stole that vehicle, why they bring it to our street.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, that's part of the benefit of having this technology. And I also wanted to remind people, too, that having a cell phone has been pretty awesome for this fact is, like, if I wanted to listen to Freedom Slips, if I wanted to listen to Revolution Radio,
you can do it
on your phone. I can do it from anywhere. Yeah.
I've done it before too. I have a iPhone 6 Plus. And I've actually listened to it going to Kansas City. I listen to internet radio. I can, you know, I can watch YouTube videos. I can do anything with a 4G and LTE signal, just about. I've actually talked to a friend in Australia for an hour and a half when I was going down to Indianapolis one time. It just amazed me. I never lost. I had at least 3 bars of signal, AT&T signal, going all the way down to Indianapolis. And I even talked to her going to Kansas City one time, too, for an hour. I just need to say, I don't know what in the world happened there a minute ago.
Is that Keith calling in, or are you trying to connect Keith?
No, I just tried the entire callback. I just hit the callback to everyone, and it rang Keith, too. So.
Oh.
But I moved my keyboard, and I moved my microphone, and everything shut off, and I don't know what in the world happened.
It's funny, like what I'm talking about.
I'm
talking about something happening on the street, and all of a sudden I get disconnected. Conspiracy.
No, my computer turned off. I had to turn the button back on, so I don't know what happened there. You didn't go in on TeamViewer or anything like that, did you?
Did I what?
I said you didn't go in on TeamViewer or anything like that, did you?
No.
Or I wonder if somebody went in on TeamViewer and shut me off, or I don't know. the computer shut off. And then luckily I was able to just hit the button and to come back on, and everything was right there still. So I don't know what happened.
Yeah, you know, and it's like it's also the technologies we're using, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, I was working with cutting edge computers. Like you think of a computer manufacturer and they were sending me their computers to check out and see, to evaluate. And, I just forgot where I was going with that. But, So when you're using your computer, it's giving off heat. That's a waste of energy. So our machines are wasting energy. They're very wasteful. And then the everything that they do, the processor, the electronics, it's all wasting energy. It all could be improved continually. And what we've known for decades is, like, if you have a machine and it's running slow, maybe it's because you have Windows on it. So we would go, well, hey, let's put free BSD. Let's put Unix on it and try it out. And what we find out is you get, like, you know, 5 to 10 times the performance on a different platform, you know. So that's something to be said, is if people are out there and they're frustrated with their devices and the technology they're using, they should know that there are alternatives. There's stuff that's faster, but you kind of have to be a little bit more technically interested in what you're doing. And I think that that's what people should realize is, you know, I'll give you a great example. Okay. As a programmer, I don't know if many people know this, but if as a programmer, let's say I write some code. Okay. I write a text document and I write some code and I put it on a disk. If I take that disk to another country, the feds see it as, transporting munitions.
Yeah. Or piracy or something like that, right? Well, they see it as treasonous, don't they, or something?
Well, it's very, to them, it's suspicious. But let's say my code is just a simple, like, it could be anything.
Yeah.
But to them, they see it as a munition. They see it as a bullet. And if I take that disc to another country, I might as well be transporting bullets. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So it's stuff like that I think people don't realize is there. It seems silly, but it's there to protect us.
Isn't it? Do you know? I mean, I'll just ask you. Maybe you know it, maybe you don't, or maybe you just can't comment on it. We see movies out there and TV shows that show technology. I'll take an example of the TV show called Person of Interest.
Yeah.
These people that are doing this thing on this TV show, they have this little cell phone and they walk up next to somebody that they're trying to follow and they hit this button and their entire cell phone gets mirrored or it gets copied. You know, they can see their texts, they can hear their phone calls and see all the incoming data. I'm under the impression that is probably real, probably true.
Oh, it definitely is. Believe me, it definitely is. If you, for example, if somebody is basically committing a crime and a cell phone is being used, what the police will do, and this is even here, the police will do is they'll say, hey, here, give me the cell phone. They have this thing that will do that. They'll scan the whole cell phone and they just give the phone back to you.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because, and then also if, let's say, you needed some information off the cell phone because, for instance, you needed to prove something to a court,
yeah,
you know, they can print it all out for you right there on the spot.
Kind of like the case that Apple's going through with the FBI?
Oh, that's very pertinent because, you know, that is, you know, people need to know that is all a cat and mouse game. That is all just, it's all a bunch of hoopla. For instance,
I think it is too.
Yeah, for instance, back doors are everywhere. There's back doors in everything, and it's not a conspiracy. It's just what you do if you want to have an ability to fix something that is broken in such a way where the end user is completely cut off from their service or device.
Yep.
And that can be abused. It can be used in some ways to be bad. But when the government is telling like Apple or any company, you need to break this open or for us, it's really to me like for show, because they should know how to do it themselves.
They want to have. They just need a precedent is all they need.
Yeah. And you got guys like, McAfee. John McAfee.
Yeah.
He's sitting there going, I'll do it for free.
He's probably done it already.
Yeah. Well, so you got, and it's funny because you've got these government people. They're like, you're going to be like, oh yeah, this blah, blah, blah. This is all we need to have this done. And then you've got hackers sitting there going, you know, I could do this yesterday.
Yeah. And it's, I want to bring up the example of Hillary Clinton, too. I think she claimed that she deleted her emails, and they're poof, they're gone. They just disappeared. And, you know, I told everybody that started talking about that didn't really know about computers. And I said, well, that's just a fallacy anyways. It can't be done. Unless you just destroy the hard drive, and besides, all of her emails are on a server.
Yeah, and also, you know, we computer guys, we have this thing called disk wipe, and we can wipe a hard drive where we basically, when you delete a file, it leaves this negative image of the file on the hard drive, so you can always undelete something. But if you wipe a disk, it makes it so you can't.
Right.
Well, into a forensic analysts, they're going to look at this and they're going to say obstruction of justice in some way, because if I find that the disk has been wiped, that's evidence of somebody trying to cover their tracks. And you have to know where you to get disk wipe. You have to actually, you know, it's you have to have a good reason to wipe a disk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that, for instance, you know, when we're working with trade secret software, or software that is like not in the public, it's not used by the public, and we install it on a machine, and we go to remove it, and this is sensitive software, we don't want someone to undelete. Yeah, we'll wipe a disk. That's actually what reasons why we do that. It's for security. But other people might say, oh, well, I wiped a disk. Well, if you wipe the disk or you destroy the hard drive, you are definitely making evidence for the court to assume that you are hiding something,
mm-hmm.
and that's never good.
Yeah. No, it isn't. Not at all. Especially in their eyes, the system's eyes, they want to be the only criminal element out there. They want to be the only one that's in control. I've always thought for a long, long time, you know, I'm 52. Excuse me. I'm 52 now, Gavin, and I remember when the computer started coming out, and I heard all the stories way back in the middle 80s and that they were going to be intrusive. All they were going to do was spy on you and collect all your data, this, that, and the other thing. And, well, it's basically all true. I didn't even get my first computer until Christmas of 2008.
Wow.
So I'm relatively new to all of this.
I got my first computer like in 1987 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, computers didn't even become available to the public until I was out of school for, I don't know, 4 or 6 years before they started doing that. So I just didn't want anything to do with them. I didn't really need them. It wasn't my life, and it wasn't my total existence to have a computer and to do all this stuff.
Yeah, well, I my mom got me an IBM PC Junior, and after that I opted to stay indoors all the time because I was teaching myself programming,
uh-huh.
and I was learning DOS, and it was a trade-off. I traded off a lot of my childhood so that way I could have this technical ability, you know. Yeah.
I actually have a laptop here. It's a refurbished laptop. It's Windows 7, but I have Manjaro Linux partitioned off, so you know I can either work on the Linux or work on the Windows 7. I want to be able to broadcast on this. I have like I just mentioned there, Manjaro. I'm sure that there's probably plenty of better systems out there, but that just happened to be the one that this one friend hooked me up with. And there's a broadcaster on there. Now there's IDJC. I can access internet radio from my Linux and do shows if I want. I got Skype on there. I know a lot of people are looking for a lot better alternative than Skype is, and I sure am too.
Yeah, it's funny how we got this. There's this monopolization going on everywhere, and
yeah.
And I was actually surprised when I came to Revolution Radio that we were all using Skype to do everything, and I knew that was going to have some issues here and there. And you see them. You see, there's little bumps in the road we have when we're trying to connect to people and whatnot. But
I'd love to find something different.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
because I've had. Can't tell you how many Skype conversations just shut off in mid-sentence. Would lose the guess. They would become all digitized, and their signal would just go haywire or whatever, and they would drop off. I had Wayne Manson on one time, and after about 15 minutes, the call was dropped. My stream was shut off, my broadcaster, and that was it. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, Wayne Manson is supposedly he's former NSA analyst or something like that. And they didn't really like him talking about Israel at the moment, so I think they shut us off. I think they shut us off that day.
Oh yeah, what about this, folks? You know, did you know that? You know, have you guys heard about this Israeli company that basically runs all the emails that they possibly can in America through?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't remember the name of it. But
well, they're also spying out a lot of American corporations too. The way I hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, what are they doing? Are they making a list of people of interest?
Yeah, yeah, they are.
I hope they don't put me on that list. I'm totally not interesting. The only thing I do is I play heavy metal guitar, you know? Please don't try to stop me from doing that. It's the world loves it. I love it. And I think it's why I'm here. So yeah. I'm not trying to cause no trouble with nobody. I just want to be able to play on stages wherever they'll let me play.
Do you and your band cover a lot of stuff?
Well, you know, we will. I mean, I'm not really, we actually are in a situation now where I've been told I'm not allowed to say certain things to anybody because we're about to bust into the scene here big time. And so I'm supposed to be radio silent, but I can't escape the radio right now. So I've been given permission to do my show because it's not a conflict of interest. But as far as the band, yeah, we got some stuff we're about to do. It's going to be pretty cool. So that's about all I can really say.
Ah, well, that's okay. I'm not concerned about that.
Yeah.
You know, intellectual properties are supposed to be your own. You're supposed to be able to keep your own secrets in that. But well, you know, I was going to mention earlier, Gavin, that I think the people that thought of the internet and invented it and financed it, I don't believe for a second that they would ever not have total 100% control of it.
Yeah, you know, that's true, but also there was a little bit of a scare in a way where you had Obama, President Obama, saying stuff like, well, we need an internet kill switch. And it's like, hello, why would you ever say such a thing? Because, you know, what the exact share is, but there is an economy on the internet. And if you decided, I'm going to kill it, well, what's that going to do?
The way I understand it, they can't really do that because governments talk to each other, secret agencies talk to each other through the internet. I've always heard for a long time that there's a second internet over and beyond the dark net. But I don't know people that do anything like that. That's for sure.
Well, you know, the actual backbone of the internet is a layered system. It's got tiers of communication speeds. So you have, you know, because you have local users that only need to communicate at a certain speed. And then you have these higher tiers where the internet is so blazingly fast that, let's say, if you were a hacker and you were hacking with the assistance of your hacking software, you could do a lot more damage on these higher level tiers than the lower ones.
Certainly.
Yeah, because you got someone who can circumvent you at a faster rate and shut you down faster than you could do it any other way.
Well, I mean, let's just take Google Fiber, for instance. Mm-hmm. Gabin, I think they're coming out with the at least a single gig of speed, 1,000 megabytes of speed. You know, I have Comcast Blast, and I get like 125 megs sometimes, and about 25 on the upload. I mean, that's pretty decent as far as internet goes. I mean, I was in Kansas City and I spent 3 weeks out there. I tried to do some stuff on the internet out there, and they had a speed test give me 0.89 megs, and I couldn't do nothing with it. I mean, you can't even hardly open one single page with that kind of internet. I can imagine if somebody had a teraflop or, you know, a single teraflop of internal computing power, and they had multiple gigs of speed at their control. I can imagine what they would do.
Yeah, I hear you. That's just when you got. And here's another thing too: is like John McAfee said something very true about hacker culture, and what he was saying was about why are we losing? Why are we being under attack by these other countries? Like China and that kind of thing. And what he said was that the reason why we don't have the type of hacker force that we probably should have is because the government, the U.S. government, doesn't want to pay someone that has a pink or blue mohawk to smoke pot all day and sit there, because that's what you would have to do.
Yeah.
Because these, you're talking about people that are so into this that this is their whole world. Uh-huh. Their entire ego is just dumped into this thing.
They're not going to go out and get a regular job.
Yeah. If you can harness that and you use that, you could do some pretty awesome stuff. But if you're telling people, no, you got to shave your head, uh-huh, you have to have a clean drug test,
no piercings, no tattoos.
It's not going to happen. You're not going to get that. You're going to get people that are, they're not into it. They're not devoting their lives to it. Like I chose to be on computers instead of go out and play with other kids. Uh-huh. So I kind of have an understanding of the hacker crowd where I'm like, this is amazing. You know, the only hackers the government can get are the ones that they pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't understand it.
The ones that they've entrapped and given the choice of either jail time or working with us.
Yeah, because, you know, if you abuse the technology, if you get caught and you're abusing the technology, like I would never, this is also the same thing as, you know, I would never want to risk losing the ability to use technology or electronics, because they've done permanent bans on some people, you know?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Like, you're not allowed to be around a computer. You're not allowed to be around a cell phone.
What's that guy over there in England? The one that that revealed the thing back about a dozen years or so ago? I think he's British, and he hacked into the, I don't know what it was, the Pentagon or the NSA or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? I think he's still not allowed to have
it. Is it Gary McKinnon?
Yeah, I think it is, yes.
He was a Scottish systems administrator.
Is that what it
and
was?
And that was October 2012?
Nah,
or something
it's
like that?
Been longer ago than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Seems like it was about a dozen years ago or so. Maybe I'm wrong. But McKinnon does sound right, though.
I see there's a profile here on the internet calling him the autistic hacker.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's the same person.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then you got, like, some claims that he found evidence of UFO and non-terrestrial officials. That's what I'm reading here.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was trying to look something up there.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tentatively ask you if you might stay on until after the break.
Okay.
I was going to try to call over there to Ireland, actually. I was going to try to get the president of the IRB, Irish Republican Brotherhood. I had him on about 3 weeks back, and then we haven't been able to connect since then, but I was going to try him. And I guess if I can't get a hold of him, can you continue on?
Yeah, I'll hang out. I'll mute my microphone and hang out.
Okay. I got about less than 2 minutes left here, I think, until we go to break. But I know there was, well, I didn't really want to get into a whole lot more until after the break, because we're going to start getting the music and it'll interrupt somebody, one or the other. I mean, one of us, anyways. No, you're an interesting guy there. Really
Thank
is.
You. Thank you.
You're in an interesting spot there, you know it?
Yeah.
I actually met someone else that's in military intelligence, and I told her she was in an interesting spot. She said a lot of the military is being awakened and aware to what's going on. And I thought, yeah, you're in an interesting spot too.
Yeah, I like I said, I feel blessed to be where I am, and also I've had very, very smart, intelligent parents that, you know, and my grandparents, I have them to thank, you know, it's just been really really awesome.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a break right there, everyone, and I just happened to look, Gary McKinnon, 2002, he was accused. So we'll be right back, everyone.